white people are part of the social tapestry, literally, from an existential point of view, and you can't ignore them, and structurally they are there. So on the one hand, there's work that white people must do amongst themselves. We shouldn't be distracted. I'd rather you and I were talking about science fiction written by black authors, for example. But on the other hand, in order to get there, we also can't avoid the result of that white supremacist history, and therefore we continue doing that kind of intellectual work. You and I agreed on WhatsApp earlier that parenthetical comments are cool to have. Before we continue to the next theme, as a parenthetical question, how do you navigate that? On the one hand, wanting to not talk about Helen Ziller, not talk about white liberals. On the other hand, you can't have a self-contained intra-black conversation that doesn't engage with white supremacy, because the reality of white supremacist structures, including racial capital, means that at the very least, you've got to describe it. And if we're going to talk about organizing is in relation to something, and it is in relation to whiteness. How do you deal with that at a personal level?
Well, let me just go back quickly and just to say that there's something really important that you pointed to is the ways in which historically the white liberal establishment has absolved themselves in the face of the Afrikaner right-wing establishment. And importantly, if you go back to the literature on the roots of segregation, and particularly the segregation between sort of citizen and subject citizens, it is British policy long before it was the Boers. It's not a function of the Boers imposing apartheid on us. It is actually British policy. They're the first in the post-emancipation period to begin to impose. So you look at people, look at Natal, for example, look at the kind of policies that were there immediately. And I'm forgetting his name right now. He escapes me. But all of those, those colonial administrators were the first to implement segregation. It was just that the Afrikaners had a more crude way of putting it, but the British laid the foundation because that's important, because very often they now sort of put their hands up and say, well, we're kind of just all at the mercy of the Afrikaners. But actually, it is their policy that laid the ground across the continent. That's why you look at people like Mahmoud Mandani writing about citizen and subject, that apartheid is not just the exception, but it was a rule across the continent because of British segregationist policy. Really, so I just want to add that important dimension around white liberalism and its very dangerous consequences for us as Black people. I think for me, of course, as you're hearing, I spend an incredible amount of time having to understand, because this is what structures the world that I live in, right? Anti-Blackness structures the world that we live in. So I cannot ignore what is in front of me and what structures mine and many other people's lives across generations. And it's important for us as Black people to have an analysis of our crisis. And so in as far as there's an analysis and knowing what are the historical circumstances, what is the genealogy? Because apartheid, and again, even that's a short historical memory. Let's go back to 1652. Many of these things do not happen out of vacuum. There's an intellectual genealogy. If you look at people like Hendrik Verwoerd, there's an incredible amount of intellectual work that goes into creating these systems. And it's important for us to know how these systems work as a way of ensuring that we do not simply replicate those very same systems. We need to interrogate those systems. So it's not about inclusion into an illegitimate settler state, right? And so that's an important dimension. But then for me, it's to then say, what vantage point with this analysis? I'm not going to use the terms of engagement that have been set for me. It's to say that, right, I need to understand my oppressor. That's incredibly important. But in terms of then how I then interpret this, it becomes really important in terms of our own African epistemologies. And this is really important because very often when people hear African epistemology, they think about so-called tradition, something of the past, and don't think about the ways in which African epistemologies and African cosmologies are just as capable of apprehending the crisis that is in front of us. And so this is why, for example, Ubuntu, that piece that I wrote, was really important, because that is a philosophy of race. It has critiqued whiteness. It has critiqued the human. And that is important to think about, how are our epistemologies also engaging with the very same thing, right? And so for me, it's to say that, great, I must have a critique. But beyond a critique, I also need to have a vision. And the vision is to say that beyond simply responding to whiteness and saying, I am a man, I am a woman, that kind of thing, and trying to prove myself within those terms, is to say, what do I gain or what do we gain from us as Black people? And I try to have the difficult conversations amongst us because they're very difficult. It's not to say that because we're all Black and we're oppressed, we love each other.
No,
and we all
we're
agree.
Not. We're diverse. And one of the burdens of whiteness to undo is exactly the idea that Black people can't have diversity amongst ourselves, even on questions of epistemology.